It was 40 years ago today, on a patch of hollow grass. Body took a swipe at me.
Yeah, blue makes me sick.
Did you actually
that
hear
is the weird, that is the weirdest song ever.
Did you actually hear the lyrics then? There's some pretty bad lyrics in that.
Yeah, no, it's some quality writing there.
They said when Artie was up against, I can't remember who was up against, and then he just ended up saying he took it up the ass. Holy
what?
Hell.
So, you can't say that about Artie.
Oh my god. Oh, that's not how I expected that to start. But anyway, hello everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. Obviously, this is a State of Origin talk. The mighty New South Wales Blues won the second one pretty convincingly, 34-10. I mean, really. It looked like what the first one really should have been.
Well, I guess, yeah, that's what everybody is thinking, that this series, yeah. I guess, was going to be just complete and utter ass whoopings by New South Wales dished out in all three games. But, it wasn't surprising. The game one was obviously a bit of a surprise, but this game, you know, in Sydney. And yeah, I don't think it would have surprised a lot of people at all.
No, and I think, I'm not giving Cody Walker all the credit. He played okay, but clearly I think I talked to about four or five people, and they put money on Cleary. And actually, no, it was my chiropractor. Now that I think about it, he specifically said on this game, who's putting money on Nathan Cleary, because he said there's no doubt in his mind that he has to have a good game in order for New South Wales to win. And he's completely right.
Just because he has to have a good game doesn't mean he's going to.
No, I know, but I was shocked how like accurate he was, because he had a really good game. He took the line on more. His kicking game was there.
His kicking game was immaculate.
He moved the side around really, really well. So he just did the game that Nathan Cleary's been doing all year, up until the grand final and then the first State of Origin. So,
that's true. I don't think he was terribly convincing in the semi final either. That's fair. Cleary. So I think he sort of had a bit of a, and to say, you know, to have a bit of a three game rough trot. Yeah, you know, three of the biggest games that's going around, a semi-final, a grand final, and then Origin 1. So, a bit of BBF, bit of bounce back factor. So that's and like you said, look, it was. I can't remember where I stole that from.
that sounds terribly like a basketball ESPN line, but anyway. Continue.
Probably stolen it off like an ESPN radio show that I listen to. So. bit of BBF. So, New South Wales sort of showed their intent from the get go.
Yeah.
You know, kicking off, Queensland received, and Queensland made what, 15 meters in the first set of six.
Yeah.
They were just ravaging Queensland from the start.
Big time.
To try and get into that possession, you know, that possession and position battle early, and it worked a treat.
Yeah, it did. I think once they sort of hit that sort of first set, they started completing. They weren't scoring straight away up until 16 minutes, of course, but they were completing their sets very well, and that's pretty evident on, I guess, their completed sets, 89%. 40 out of 45, but especially in their first sort of set, first stanza, they were just happy just to complete their sets. They weren't looking to sort of break the line, but they just were happy, I guess, to complete the sets. I mean, you're
turning the screws.
Your guys, once you got the ball, your guys started brilliantly with Xavier Coates, who did this unbelievable flip.
It was just a big swan dive.
And look, honestly, looking at it, he had to do it, I guess, and the timing was perfect.
I thought there was no chance in hell that he got it down inside inside the touch and goal line. There was no chance in hell until they slowed it down, and he's probably put the ball down an inch and a half inside the line. If you look at it in fast motion, it's just you're just like, oh well, he's gone out. You know, that's fine. Yeah, the Queensland, we'll get back down there again. But to show it on the replay, it's like, oh my god, he's actually got it down.
Well, the ref, because going off the touch, he's called it a try. So they've obviously on their angle.
Which I thought, so wow, they've got that one wrong straight away.
Yeah. On the back of that, just before that, Gay Guy again had another great game. Like he didn't do as good as the first one offensively, except for that try, setting up that try. But defensively, he still kept Whiten in check up until obviously Whiten sort of broke through in the 42nd minute. But he was still good.
Look, New South Wales cut one half of the field off, essentially. They didn't really want to go down that side a whole lot. They wanted to expose Queensland's weakness, and that was Kurt Capewell at centre and Philip Sammy on the wing, and they did it time and time and time again. Kicking long, kicking early, kicking on the third tackle, fourth tackle, making Sammy turn around and then just rushing Addo Carr at him. And you just can't coach good old-fashioned speed. And Addo Carr's got plenty of it, and that's what put the pressure on. It forced dropouts. It forced Queensland to come out from inside their own 10-meter line on multiple occasions. And the pressure, it was just too much to absorb.
Is he just, like, literally, this is Addo Carr I'm talking about. Is he the best winger at the moment? He just, I know he wants to play the fullback, and that's just because his agent wants to get that fullback money. I mean, this is a sidebar, but I mean,
that's a total money ploy.
He's staying in Melbourne for at least another year, which is great for Melbourne. But he really is a out and out winger and a really good one.
Absolutely.
I don't think he needs to move to fullback to get decent money. Honestly, I don't think he needs to at all.
I just don't believe in this positional money garbage. Like, you know, if you're a good winger, you're valuable to your team, then why can't you command $750,000?
Just because
you're a winger, like you've got that stigma that you're a winger. I don't believe in that. If you're worth the money, then a team will pay it.
I get it for the 7 and the 9. Like your quarterback in NFL sort of thing, and you know certain other little positions in NFL, but I think the wingers to me is just on par with any back.
Critical
battery. The center and the fullback. So
look, the good ones will earn their keep.
Yeah, yeah. Just on Kurt Capewell, he did get the most run meters for you guys, but how did you think he went at centre? I mean, he really isn't a centre at the end of the day.
No, he's not. And he was. That's what I mean. I think
probably a little bit exposed.
They went down that side, and who was playing inside him was Ben Hunt from 78 minutes of that game. After Munster was, I don't give a crap what anybody says, Munster was taken out in the air, a jersey pull.
I agree.
From behind. I don't care what anybody says, I don't care what any of the media says, all the write-ups, all the beat-ups and everything about it. He was absolutely 100% pulled from behind by the jersey while he was in the air, and that's why his head bounced off the ground. It's as simple as that. Don't give me these pictures of Cameron Munster's foot being on the ground while Tyson Frizzell has already got a handful of jersey. Show me the still frame from half a second before that, a second before that, when he's still got his hand on the jersey, pulling him down from behind while he's in the air. It's as simple as that.
I agree. I will say it was a penalty. I thought it was going to be called a penalty. I really don't understand why I didn't get called a penalty.
It's not a sin binning or anything. Straight up in the end goal and you go back out to the 20.
That's right. It's hard to say. To me, it's hard to say that's the reason he hit his head. I really don't know if that's the reason he hit his head, to be honest.
Yeah, no, it's 100% why he hit his head, because he pulled him down from behind. Munster lands on his back, and then his head hits the ground. It is 100% the reason why.
Yeah,
he's pulled him down from behind by his jersey while he's in the air.
Oh, I agree. It just looked like it was just going to look like that sort of motion anyway. So you reckon even if he didn't get touched, his head wouldn't have hit ground.
He's been yanked from behind and he's in the air. Is that not as classed as a defenseless player?
It's a penalty. It's a penalty straight away.
It's the same with all this BS that they do at the moment. And it's really giving me the shits this year. It has for a little while, but all this garbage of when the kicker kicks the ball, you know, whoever it is that comes through, tackles and then sort of goes on with it and sort of rubs them into the ground and just sort of holds onto them and everything like that. It's a tactic to stop kickers putting other people on side if they're in front, because if the kicker can kick the ball, get down, and then he can put people who are in front of him back on side. And just this garbage of hitting the kicker as defenseless as they can get in the air, legs up, and they get hit. And then they drive them into the ground. You have a look at what some of the punishment that Thurston used to take. And granted, he was one of the best players in the game, but it's not safe.
Yeah, no, it isn't.
If they want to spruik and preach safety to the player, doing those things to the kicker is just not safe.
Oh, I understand that. In that aspect, on slow-mo, 100%, I agree with you. And even if it was full normal speed, you could see Frizzell intentionally grab the jersey. All I'm saying is I don't think he intentionally, I don't think it was intentional that he's taken him out, he's hit his head
No, that's not intentional. But to me, the intent's there to pull him down and pull him back while he's in the air.
That should have been a penalty. Interestingly enough,
and that changes the game. To say that it changes the game,
it turns.
It's, I mean, Munster still goes out and doesn't come back.
Well, and Hunt didn't have the best game. I mean, we can all agree on that.
No, I mean, and New South Wales attacked that left hand defence for the first three tries in the first half.
On Munster, but like the doctor did come out and said he did pass his HIA, but
that's right.
It was classed as a category one based on poor balance. Sorry, so he's obviously
that's right.
Regardless, but how does that work?
And there you go. There's poking holes in the HIA protocol right there. Like, you can tell me that he's passed his HIA test, but he's still got the wobbly boot on after 15 minutes, and they're going to go, oh, yeah, no, it's cool. He's passed his HIA. So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, all well and good. Yes, he's passed the HIA, but he doesn't come back into the game because he's still wonky.
My concern is, and that's right. If you're wonky, you're wonky. I mean, the whole, you know, we don't have to keep going about Boyd Cordner, but, like, that's a perfect example. If you are concussed, you're concussed.
But so, if he's passed his HIA... Why couldn't he come? Okay, so he's passed his HIA.
I guess he's feeling
better 5 minutes into the second half.
Yeah, I thought the doctors ruled it.
Why can't he go back on?
I don't know.
It
was obviously clearly up to the doctor. The doctor said he just didn't have enough great balance. I don't mind him playing, and this is possibly why now that I think about it, but I'm assuming because he did pass his HIA, that's why he's allowed to play in this game three this week coming.
I'm assuming
because if he didn't pass, he would have. Like, the whole rule is if you don't pass, you can't play the next week. So,
not necessarily. You go into concussion protocol, and then you would be watched 24/7 like a hawk by doctors.
Yeah. Well, possibly.
No, but you don't get instantly ruled out, but. You would have to go through all sorts of concussion protocol. Yeah. I get it. You've still got a week to go. You'd be very limited at training.
Yeah.
Yeah. There'd be all sorts of tests and stuff like that that the doctors would have to be satisfied with before you would be able to play in the next week.
What's interesting to me, for just going back to the game, is that you didn't really in Queensland, I'm saying, because we're your Queensland, I'm New South Wales, so that's not evident. But you didn't play bad. We just had to at all. I don't think he's played that bad at all. It's just that we had, honestly, had better line breaks. We were able to break your line a lot easier.
Amount of possession, line breaks, and poor ball control by Queensland. They had three instances in that first half, like late in the first half, where after a dropout, and then they're forced to drop out, and then two coughed up balls inside their own 20. To give New South Wales more quality possession inside Queensland's 20, and it was too much.
It's
54% possession to New South Wales. You can't give them that much possession.
That first half, we just kept us out for like three or four times. That was amazing. After that, I thought there's no way we're going to break this line at all.
I guess that was a sort of a testament that, you know, the halftime score was only 18-4. Like, it could have been 28-4.
Yeah, good point.
But the amount of possession that they had inside Queensland's 20, inside Queensland's 10, and for them to be turned away as many times as they were, and then unfortunately that sort of comes back at the end of the game with Queensland, because they're gassed, they're already one player in the hole, out of their interchange rotation, but I'm sure Ben Hunt at training would have been, might have been in and out of playing in the halves, but to be in there so early was, obviously not in the game plan, but I think that very much disrupted what Queensland sort of wanted to do.
Their game plan, I think so. How did you think of your boy? Well, I'm only saying your boy because he's from North Queensland. How did you think Valentine Holmes played? I thought it was interesting.
I thought he was super solid.
Yeah, I did too.
He didn't set the world on fire.
Yeah.
He was good. He was good defensively. I think, sort of roaming behind the posts, playing that traditional fullback role defensively. He didn't get found out of position. He took a lot of really, really hard runs. Those hard nose runs that you need to get done by, your outside backs to get yourself out of trouble. And I thought he did that unbelievably well. Not as flashy as what AJ would have been in that, but I thought he was really solid for not playing football for 5 weeks. 5 weeks plus.
Well, and that's where I'm surprised he was a first choice kicker. I mean, obviously they've worked this out of training, but I'm surprised he was a first choice goal kicker over Cherry Evans. It was surprising to me a little bit.
Yeah, I guess so. As the year went on for North Queensland, his kicks got better and better. He had the couple of games at the start of the year where he didn't really sort of have his kicking boots. There he was pretty ordinary, but as time went on throughout the season, he had that ankle injury throughout the middle of the season where he was out for 8 weeks, and when he come back, it took him a long time to sort of get back into the swing of things. But one thing that really sort of didn't desert him was his kicking. Like, his kicking from the sidelines, I thought this year was good, and it was only 1-for-2 in this game, but obviously they didn't create as many opportunities. They just didn't have the opportunities to score tries, Queensland. So when they actually did get inside New South Wales, half and inside their quarter, there was no legs left. There was no energy. Like I said, Ben Hunt, obviously not the first choice to be playing alongside Cherry Evans in the halves. And I think that told fairly often.
What did you make of the 56 minute, I'll call it fracas, so to speak, between Painhouse and Tino?
When you watch the full vision, it's not even those two guys that started.
No, it wasn't. It was Jake Friend.
That's right. It's Nathan Brown being a dickhead.
Yeah.
And kicking the ball away, and Jake Friend slapping him on the back of the head. And then Nathan Brown turns around and sees that the guy is like a foot shorter than him, and he's like, righto, let's go.
And then these two, apparently,
Tino and Haas, they wanted to rip each other's arms off.
Apparently, this goes back to juniors, of what I've read. Haas was, basically saying he's jealous of Tino's jealous
give me
of
here, him. Give me a break. Oh,
I'm serious. That's what it's said. What I've read.
Oh, he's riding on my coattails. What coattails is that? Wooden spooner as opposed to premiership winner? Give me a break. Who the hell does he think he is?
Well, they're going to be in the same state soon, so that's going to be
very
interesting.
That's right. They're going to be playing each other two times a year, so that's it. Bring it on.
I'm surprised I seen a couple of closed fists, like actual fighting. It wasn't like obviously full on, but
there was a couple of little sneaky jabs there by Payne Huss.
God, he's a big
guy. I think that's what really sort of escalated things. There was a couple little sneaky left hand jabs. I think while they were trying to do an AFL style, I'm going to hold onto your jersey and punch you so I don't get pinged for punching people.
He's got his shoulder muscles. Payne Huss is like there's massive shoulder muscles when his shirt got ripped. God damn, he's big.
Oh yeah, no, he's gigantic.
And Tino doesn't Tino doesn't back off at all. I mean, he's not a small guy anyway, but. It was just fun. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I guess you're not allowed to do that anymore. You're not allowed to punch ten minutes in the bin. I guess it sort of it opened up the game a little bit and Queensland got a try out of it. So I guess you can't really complain too much. You know, the Papali try sort of as he sliced straight through the middle and scored next to the sticks, but. That was obviously just too little too late.
Yeah. What did you – I mean, have you had a chance to look at the Game 3 sides yet?
So the Game 3 – no, keep going.
No, yeah, the Game 3 sides. I guess I'm kind of shocked that Harry Grant is actually going to be on the bench. I don't know if Ben Hunt deserved. I don't think Ben Hunt didn't really do much wrong, to be completely honest.
He got thrown into the game where I guess he wasn't really meant to. So, and that sucks that it sort of cost him his position.
Well. I guess my theory was I thought if you were going to drop someone to put Harry Grant in, which I don't know. I still think Harry Grant's early, but if you're going to put him in, I thought you maybe drop Jake Friend and put, and then move Ben Hunt there. But it's, it's fine. I just don't know if Harry Grant's the right
move. As much as I was a little bit skeptical of Jake Friend coming into this team and being the number nine there of, I've really liked what he's done in the first two games, so I don't think he hasn't warranted being dropped.
I just don't know enough. The Harry Grant move is a good move. Like he's played 14 games this year in his rookie season, and then that's it. So and he's coming off an injury. I don't know.
Yeah, look, I guess they want some spark now. I don't think there's a lot that they can do about it.
And then the other positional change is Corey Allen's on the wing.
Well, Leo, like we said before, New South Wales took advantage of Queensland's lack of. I guess experience and sort of guys that are probably in not the best form, but guys that probably didn't really warrant being there. As I sort of said, Capewell's not a centre, and under normal circumstances, unfortunately, Philip Sammy wouldn't be anywhere near the selection process at all.
Good point. Yeah, well, Capewell's picked again. In this game three, other than that, you've got Christian Welsh back. I mean, I'm a big fan of Christian Welsh purely because he's a Melbourne Storm supporter. On our end, we're 1-17 straight through, so there's no changes on our end. Which is, I guess, like, I mean, why would you? Like, if the team played that good, there's probably no point changing it. They've got obviously a couple of emergencies, but I guess the team was good enough in the second game. You might as well keep it with what you're going. So.
Oh, there's absolutely no reason for New South Wales to change their team, you know, unless there's injury. There's no reason to change. You know, Queensland have had to make changes, you know, not through injury, just through, you know, exposure. So, they would have been silly. It's unfortunate that it's unfortunate for Ben Hunt to get booted. They had to do something with Philip Sammy, but that whole left side edge in Ben Hunt, Kurt Capewell, and Philip Sammy was exposed in many ways and multiple times.
The other, before we move on, to talk about some, other four teams of the NRL, what do you think of possibly, look, Channel 9 have the exclusive rights to the State of Origin in the grand final. It's possible we're not even going to hear, very possible we're not even going to hear the Channel 9 commentators for this game.
This is the funniest thing I've heard today.
Well, so just so everyone's sort of caught up, our as in Queensland, our Premier, Anastasia Palaszczuk, has basically said that, you know, the normal rules apply. If you're coming from New South Wales or Greater Sydney, where they're going to come from, you have to still quarantine for 14 days. They can have an exemption, but if they don't, they still have to quarantine. And if that's the case, there's no way your Phil Gould, your Ray Warrens, and your Andrew Johns are going to commentate. So I don't know what that means. Like, I really don't know, because I'm trying to think of any Queensland, like, who would commentate. I think it's ridiculous, to be completely honest. I don't need Phil Gould. I need to hear Ray Warren. I'd rather hear Ray Warren.
It's all just... No, of course. It's all just BS mind games. Like, I'm sure that they're going to get the exemption and let them into the state. Like, this is just... Yeah, this is garbage. One other thing that's sort of come out, in the past 24 hours, that, like you said, our illustrious Premier has come out and said, oh, no, as of Tuesday, we're going to up the capacity of our stadiums. It's not going to be 75% capacity anymore. It's going to be 100%. So Suncorp Stadium is going to be 52,000 rabid fans.
And on the back of that, one of my mates just booked tickets because the tickets became open. He was able to snap them up, which that's fine. All to him, and that's fine. I wouldn't go for the pure, well, on personal reasons, I wouldn't go. But it's funny. You're exactly right. It's funny you can say, let's open the floodgates and have 52,000 people sit next to each other, but let's not have commentators come through.
Why not?
You can't have one. I'm not a big fan of her. She just... You know, the New South Wales Premier tried to talk to her via text. This is the other... I know we're getting off topic, but she tried to talk to her. This is after the first game. Talk to her just about the border closures and what they can do with that. And then Palaszczuk just texts back Queenslander. That's it. Doesn't do anything else. Just texts back Queenslander. I couldn't believe it.
I mean, there's ways you can go about things, and that's for our Premier to text back that, that's a bit of a tool move.
Yeah, I know, but you're right. I think at the before we move on, what do you think of the 52,000 strong? Are you fine with that?
Look. Melbourne had the semi-final at Suncorp. And they had 70. They had 75% capacity. They had 39,000 there.
Yeah.
So, you know, look, I guess, you know, we're being rewarded, I guess, as a state for, you know, being fairly well disciplined, unlike some people down in Victoria, for being, you know, COVID free for so long, and not letting interstate travelers sort of come into the state unless they've got their 14-day quarantine out of the way, And I guess the Premier thinks she's rewarding everybody.
Well, I mean, I'll give her for the fact, not that I'm a supporter, but I'll give her for the fact of, like, you're going to have 52,000 Queensland people in there because they're not going to come from New South Wales unless they're New South Wales fans.
No, that's right. Well, yeah, there's obviously going to be Blues. There's Blues fans in Queensland. So,
oh, I am.
Yeah, people aren't going to be able to fly here from Sydney.
I get that. Yeah, I mean, I'm a supporter, but what I'm saying is she's gave you that slight advantage of just saying, yeah, we'll pack it out, and then, you know, just guess that little bit of edge that you may need, the 52,000 strong. I mean, it's going to be great to watch. I haven't seen a big crowd for so long.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, you know, it was kind of funny too that there was only 36,000 at almost called it Telstra Stadium then at at ANZ Stadium when they could have had 40,000 there. So they couldn't even sell it out at half capacity.
With nothing going on. Yeah, I don't get it either. There's nothing going on down there.
And you're still 4,000 people short of a sellout.
There's no music festivals. There's no nothing going on. So you're right. I just don't get it.
No, I don't understand. When they said the crowd number, I was baffled. It's like I don't understand.
Yeah. No, I was. I thought, you know, there's no reason. I did literally, except for like a Wednesday night. There's no reason why they shouldn't be able to go to the game. I really don't get it at all. There's no sports on. There's nothing on. There's literally nothing going on.
There's no cricket. There's no anything.
So, yeah, it'll be a good game, Game 3 in Suncorp. That'll be on at 8 o'clock, you know, as they've all been all over the shop, so to speak. That'll be on 8 o'clock Queensland time. So it'll be good. It'll be interesting to see who ends up taking it out.
Yeah, true. Look, and I guess, yeah, that's, I mean, we're just... Once again, it's just one of those things where it's, yeah, we've got to wait and see. Like the last decider that New South Wales won in Queensland was 2005. They've said statistically that, okay, yeah, that was terrific. They were coming off series wins in 2003 and 2004. They had a series decider win in Queensland in 2005 for a three-peat. I'm pretty sure it happened. I think they said it happened in 1994 as well. So they won 92 and 93. In 1994, they won the decider in Queensland for a three-peat. It's happening again. New South Wales have won the previous two series, and now there's a decider in Queensland for a New South Wales three-peat. So... you know, if you're a betting person, then get on New South Wales at $1.42.
Oh, it's just you coming out with the statistics. That's so awesome. That's some serious David Middleton statistics.
You know how I love my stuff. speaking of which, before we sort of move on how useless and worthless are those Telstra tracker stats? They're worthless. They're worthless to me. Intensity meters per minute, high speed efforts, speed acceleration, and kilometers covered. Like, give me a break. That helps me how.
One of my mates brought it up like during the game. He goes, it's trying to be like more NFL, and I said straight back to him, the NFL don't even do this kind of crap.
At least the NFL gives you statistics that are worth something. These are worthless.
When I look at that, I just go, okay, this is just another Telstra ad. Really, at the end of the day, all it is just to plug, you know, Telstra's paid for this, so we have to do it.
It's a sponsored bit. That's all it is.
It's ridiculous.
It's wasting my time.
It is. Yeah, I think it's absolutely ridiculous. So we'll move on. So we've got the last four teams. Well, it'll be the top four teams of 2020, just to review the top four teams. Starting with fourth place. So that was, unfortunately, slid to fourth place, but that was the Sydney Roosters. So, look, I've said it, I think, a few times during the last few weeks, but I think they looked After that big loss to South, I honestly think something will happen or something was going on. But after that loss, they internally capitulated. I mean, I don't know if that was Boyd Cordner. I don't know what it was, but it was just they capitulated. They really did.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, it was just a – I still call it just, I guess, one of those anomaly-type games where you sort of get busted by 52 points.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's the biggest loss in the club's history to South, you know, since 1908.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're both foundation clubs, but I don't know what it did. Clearly, it's done something to them psychologically. Like they just, you know, in the finals, they just didn't look their crisp, clean self. You know, they had a pretty good, regular season. They were the highest scoring offense.
Yeah.
You know, in the league.
And again, like after the COVID break, they were just coming out belting everybody. I just remember those first two or three games.
Yeah, sure.
And they're belting people like 30, 40 points. And I was just going, oh my God, this is going to be a three-peat. And then the loss, you know, they had that back to Victor Radley, that was lost for the season. I wouldn't say that was a huge, you know, a massive, massive loss, but I think it was definitely a huge loss for them. It was other key players as well, but I think that was a big loss.
In the context of their game plan, Victor Radley's a big part of it. So, you know, and they had a sprinkling of injuries throughout that whole season. You know, Daniel Tupou missed time, Boyd Cordner missed time, you know, even Jake Friend missed a few games
Tedesco
throughout the middle.
So
they were down to using Nate Butcher at dummy half for a few games this season. So their depth was tested. They still did all right. They finished with 14 wins by the end of the season. I don't like the fact that the way that the season ended and then within 10 days of the season finishing for them, all these reports coming out that Kyle Flanagan is about to be turfed out the door and everything like that. And I just feel that they were trying to pin all of their woes, especially at the end of the season, and then, you know, basically being, for them to be, you know, dumped out of the finals the way that they were, and for it to all be, you know, just the way that it seemed, for it to all be pinned on Kyle Flanagan is totally and utterly unfair and unjust.
I think we both agree on that. I think we both looked at that and just said, like, Kyle Flanagan did not have a bad season. He has his first season there, for starters. He's like 21 or 20 years old. He had his first season in one of the biggest sides in the NRL. I mean, at the end of the day, they are one of the biggest sides in the NRL, and that's just like Brisbane, just like a few other teams. But he did not have a bad season. We both said this, but I do not get why they've pinned it all on him. He got dropped, you know, a couple of times, but he didn't play bad. I don't get it. I really don't get it. Like, you know, they obviously seen something in him when they picked him up from South for 3 years. I mean, obviously he's moved on now to the Bulldogs, and they got him on the cheap. I think if it was like 500 grand, I think that's a world-class move. I honestly think the Roosters are going to rue it. I really do. I think it's what you said with the injuries and everything. I think towards the end they looked. I mean, they came close. They were only a point away from Penrith and then a try away from Canberra. But they were possibly fatigued towards the end there. Possibly.
But they're just going on the fact of we're a win now team. We will be a win now team until we're just a total train wreck. Yeah. So they've got no time to develop a halfback, so it's like, screw that. We'll just go out and find somebody else that'll just, you know, pretty much plug and play into our system here, you know, a la like somebody like a Cooper Cronk did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But that's all they'll be out there for. Yeah. But even so, they're saying that, you know, they want to keep on with Lachlan Lamb. And the other kid, Sam Walker.
Sam Walker. So, well, I'm also hearing.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they're willing to give that. how long are they willing to give those guys a shot?
But I may also hear him because Jake Friend's still there. I'm hearing Victor Radley because he's only 22. That might get pushed to the halfback and give him a trial there and see how he go. So, there's a lot of articles saying that he might do that, which kind of isn't a bad move, so to speak. But I think he's more of a lucky sort of player. But you're right. They're a win now side. They're going to keep competing for the title until something sort of blows up.
Uncle Nick Politis will keep bringing the fresh recruits in.
It's just interesting. I don't get. I don't know who they're going to get for starters. And secondly, I don't think they need I think Connor Flanagan he complimented Carey enough, Luke Carey. I think that's all he did, and that's all he had to do. If anything, it was Luke Carey.
That's all he had to do, Carey. Geary was always going to be the dominant half of those pair.
Yeah, and did Geary have a great season? I don't know. Did he? I don't know if he did, really.
Well, he had a good enough season to be picked for the first State of Origin and then turfed out the door after he has one bad performance.
That's a whole contentious issue, but...
Whether or not it was the right decision to play him, Cody Walker has fit into this team, really really well at 5'8". You've got the reigning Dally M player of the year. Do you know what I mean? In Jack White and playing out in the centres, playing out of position. So Carey was. I think the third choice, 5'8", and did Fittler call the shot wrong?
I think so. I honestly think so. I mean, we both agreed on. I think Whiten could have honestly moved to 5'8". What Cody Walker played well, and he'll
why
be in the third game as
there?
Well.
Why would he just play him there in the first place?
I think he would have been fine then. I think Zach Lomax would have been fine, but he. Look, Fittler loved. He said that after the when they got bundled out. He loves Cody Walker, and Cody Walker played okay, but he's a big Cody Walker fan. So, I agree. I don't know if Kiri's the answer at Roosters before we finish on the Roosters. I don't know. The Roosters are a win now side. They'll be easily in the top eight again. I mean, they have a great coach. Trent Robertson's been working wonders there still. They have a great side. I mean, the Morris boys are still staying for another year. They've confirmed that. So they're not terrible by any stretch of the imagination.
No, that's right.
So
Lindsay Collins is there for another couple of years. I really like what he did this year. So
and he played pretty good at that second State of Origin. I forgot Lindsay Collins. He's a good player. He's a really good player. He's very
They've got him for two more years.
Big lean guy, and obviously would have got him on the cheap. So I don't think he was that expensive. I think he was a junior.
I think they've developed him through the junior ranks. So can't confirm that, but
I think so.
But I'm pretty sure he's come through the junior ranks there. So even though he's a Queenslander, but he's come through the junior ranks there and. And that'll be the thing. They'll probably sign him up to one of those sort of mid-table sort of contracts just to sort of keep him interested until the end of 2022. And then, if he's still playing in the same sort of form that he is, he's well worth the upgraded contract.
So just before we move on, he started his career with Broncos, actually, but only for like half a year before he moved straight to the Sydney Roosters. So, that's interesting. Otherwise, he's been in Sydney Roosters. So, we'll move on, but I think they'll easily finish in top eight, probably pushing top four. They're a win now, so until it all blows up, they'll keep winning. Just to see how they're going to go with the halfback. The halfback is the key for them, what they're going to do with that.
No, that's right. All I keep thinking of is how long a leash are they going to give
Yeah.
You know, the two youngsters that are there at the moment. You know, obviously they kept Flanagan around for the year, and then and then they've turfed him. So how long's the leash going to be for the other two youngsters?
Yeah, agreed.
Which is not fair on them, really.
No, it's not. I know, but that's the way that Roosters are built, and they've been built like that for a while. So
they've been built like that for the past 15 years.
The next side is the Parramatta Eels, who finished third. I mean, the season for them had just so much promise. I mean, everybody, you know, or experts, I suppose, were tipping them to really make a push for the finals.
I sort of called it, you know, halfway through the season. They peaked too early.
They had that late season slump. You're right. Exactly right.
Yeah. They won eight of their first 10 games. And then, you know, then I think for the first 10 or 12 weeks, there was only one week of that, you know, 10 weeks where they were outside the top four. And that was week one. The rest of the time they were inside the top four, but you know, they had that late season slump. You know, probably 5 weeks or so leading into the finals. Only won a couple of games sort of coming in. So, I just thought that they peaked a little too early with that really red hot start. I guess sort of the same as Newcastle. You know, they peaked really early. Injuries derailed them. But Parramatta I think they just used up all their gas in the first 10 to 12 weeks.
So I'm trying to work out with Parramatta, like they... Yeah, you're right. They started red hot. What do you think sort of happened? I kind of pinpointed Mitchell Moses as just sort of falling out in those big games. I don't, you know, he didn't really stand up in those big games that he needed to.
Look, don't forget too, like, you know, he missed a couple of games.
He was injured.
You know, Nathan Brown, I guess, you know, who's a big sort of part of their heart and soul along with Clint Gutherson. You know, Nathan Brown missed a few games throughout the season. Dylan Brown, who they're really high on at 5'8", is, you know, he missed a few games throughout the season. So they sort of didn't have that super continuity, you know, especially coming into the last few rounds of the season. You know, they sort of had to find that click again to sort of get themselves back into that early season form.
I mean, to me, they had a huge pickup in Regal Campbell-Gillard, and then Junior Paulo was also played. He seems to be in career best form. So their forward pack isn't too bad. I think to me, what's lacking.
Well, they were arguably the best two, you know, the best 1-2 punch, you know, prop combination going around.
And they had that Nathan Brown and a few others. I think what's going to struggle for them next year is what they're going to do in the backs. I mean, yes, Mitchell Moses will be there. But on the center sort of side, it looks like, you know, for all money, Michael Jennings will probably be staring down the barrel of a 4-year doping ban. Wacka Blake, you know, his defenses are pretty frail, and I don't think Blake Ferguson's even been, has Blake Ferguson even signed a contract there yet?
Not sure. Blake Ferguson score like 2 or 3 tries all year?
Yeah,
and for, you know, a former representative winger, that's as poor as you can get. In a side where, you know, the Parramatta were, you know, especially in those first, you know, 8 to 10 weeks, they were sizzling in attack.
Yeah.
And for him to only finish, you know, fairly low on a try scorers list like that is just, you know, that's pretty poor. You know, like you said, you know, Michael Jennings, it looks like, yeah, he's in a lot of trouble. Wonga Blake is, man, he's turning into the new Manu Vadivai. He is just rocks or diamonds.
I thought you were going to say Julian O'Neill then. I don't know why. You just had that Julian O'Neill look of defense when you said that. I don't know why. Julian O'Neill.
We all know what Julian O'Neill's most famous for up here, so, and it's got nothing to do with defense.
Yeah. Excuse me. You're right, but I mean, the centers, they have to work out what they're going to do in the centers. I think, you know, Mike Acevo is Mike Acevo, and then they've got Gutherson, who had, you know, one of his best seasons ever. He nearly obviously won the Dally M. So
I reckon this was his best season.
Once I sort out the centers, I still think they're a top eight sort of pushing side. They're just halves, like especially Mitchell Moses. They just need to win those big games or be up front in those big games, or at least contest.
Yeah, look, I don't think he's, you know, at the start of the year, yeah, he sort of lived up to expectation. But like you said, he sort of not so much went missing totally, but just quiet, I guess, in those big games and in those bigger moments, unfortunately. And you know, him alongside with Luke Brooks, who was supposed to be, you know, generational halves talent that they had at the West Tigers, just both of them haven't really lived up to expectations. I think Moses has a little bit more, possibly because he's on a team that's actually winning.
Yeah.
But I just don't think he's sort of fulfilling that that dream that Parramatta had, you know, for the team when they brought Mitchell Moses in.
So we'll move on to the second side, the second place finish side, which was the Melbourne Storm, who end up, I mean, clearly finishing premiers for the 2020 season. Look, I mean, we don't have to sort of talk about them much, because really, what can you say? They had to move the entire team and everybody to the Sunshine Coast for months due to the COVID dramas in Victoria. But to overcome all that and finish the season as grand final winners, like, it's just a remarkable consistent team. They really are. I mean, I know I love them, but
there's nothing else to say, really.
They won the 17s. Look, we've talked about it before. Craig Bellamy is their linchpin. I mean, you could say certain players. You could say Cameron Smith, who had another great season, another really good season. It's crazy.
Does he go around again?
Well, that's what I was going to lean on to. What? Honestly, you say you've got Brandon Smith, who's 24, Harry Grant, who's 19, who are both really good hookers. And, you know, at least one of them, Harry Grant, has in his contract that, you know, if Cameron plays there, he can move if he wants to. What does Cameron Smith do? I'm surprised nothing's happened yet.
No, I guess he's sort of keeping these cards a little close to the chest, I guess. I honestly don't know. I honestly don't think it hurts his legacy if, you know, he decides to leave Melbourne for 1 or 2 years to go and chase a little bit of extra coin, or to bring up a young side, whether it be the Gold Coast or whether it be Brisbane. I don't think it damages his legacy at all. Yes, it would be fantastic for him to be a one-club player. You know, he's played over 400 first-grade games. You're better off leaving a year too early rather than a year too late. Because if he comes in and plays next season and then all of a sudden has some sort of weird form drop, and just dives off the edge of a cliff, you just can't see that happening. But if it does happen, then I think, you know, they'd be pretty shirty that, you know, maybe they've let, you know, they've upset Harry Grant or they've upset Brandon Smith, because it's just a total logjam there for guys that want to play number nine. They're gonna lose one of them, surely.
I mean, to me, it makes sense, honestly, to me, I think Cameron Smith should retire on a high, and I think that's where he is at the moment. I think, why not? I mean, you've won a grand final. Yes, you might go and chase money.
I think we'd said it before. If he wins the premiership, I think he rides off into the sunset.
And, you know, he just released a book, too, as well, of all things. So, if he's going to move anywhere, you've picked the two sides purely because his family is looking to move up. He's got a house in Gold Coast. He's putting his kids into Gold Coast schooling. So if he's going to move anywhere to play or even to retire, he's going to move up here in Queensland. If it's to lose two great players, you just don't do it. As much as I love Cameron Smith, I mean, if Harry Grant and Brandon Smith are the future, then Harry Grant and Brandon Smith are the future. And that's surely future. He would know that. He would know that, surely. Surely he would know that.
That's, I mean, that's the conundrum, you know, is he, you know, if he still feels that he can, then why not play on? But then you're giving a little stab to the future of the club that you supposedly love so much.
I think he retires. If he doesn't retire, and I'm only saying this because he really had another good season. He really did. He didn't have a terrible season at all. He was nearly up there. He was in the top 10 for Dally M, you know, again, which is absolutely ridiculous. So if he moves, I'm assuming he's going to have to move to a Brisbane or a Gold Coast for a year or two and chase that money, like you said. I don't see him playing Melbourne next year. I just don't. I really just don't see it. Harry Grant moves to the 9. Brandon Smith's got to be the one. Like, I think Harry Grant's...
Brandon Smith's going to be the one that they lose.
That's what I think. I think if, he, you know, after all these videos and all that, after his grand final, he got it, you know, he says what he thinks kind of thing, which is great. But I think that'll be the one they'll lose. I think, you know, that's, you know, the Warriors, that'd be a prime place for him to go to. He's a New Zealander. They need a number 9. He would get decent money. But, I mean, they've also lost Tino to Gold Coast. They've lost Suliasi Vunivalu to the Union, who's also already gone into the Wallabies side.
Instantly into the Wallabies side.
They've picked up, they haven't picked up, they've retained...
It goes to show how desperate rugby union is for players.
Yeah, well, they've retained at least Josh Adokar for at least the next year. They still got Pappenhausen, who's 22, Munster's 26. I think they're still fine. You know, if Craig Bellamy leaves, that's going to be the biggest what the hell is going to happen. That's how I see them.
Yeah, and like you said, he's the linchpin. So that's the thing. You know, well, what can they offer Craig Bellamy? You know, whether they put him in some sort of, you know, coaching director's role, or, you know, all this sort of, you know, BS that they sort of want to talk about that they want to offer him in Brisbane at the Broncos. It just depends on what Melbourne aren't going to let him go without a fight. So, you know, whether it's to stay on coaching or whether it's to do some sort of coaching director's role, you know, does Cameron Smith want to get into the coaching business, or does he want to get into the media? So I guess that's, you know, if he retires, if and when he retires, what does he want to do post post playing career? Melbourne has got some big choices coming up in the next 12 to 24 months.
I think so. I think they're right for at least this next year. It's what's going to happen after that. Like, they've already lost their CEO. He's effectively resigned and hasn't been confirmed yet, but for all money, he's going to Brisbane as the CEO. It's what they're going to do with Bellamy. I see him as, you know, as good as all the players are, you know, your Billy Slaters of the world, you know, your Cameron Smith, your Cooper Crocs. It's, and of all them, the sticking point of every player that's been with Melbourne from those guys onwards has been Craig Bellamy, because he's been there from the start. So that's, yeah. They'll still push for the title. They'll be consistent. It's hard to see them lose. I don't know if they'll make the grand final next year, but it's really hard to see them lose. They're too consistent. They really are. They really are too consistent.
No, and that'll be the thing. Like, that they seem to get these, you know, same sort of thing. These plug and play players. Like, they've just got Remus Smith from Canterbury. It'll be the same sort of thing. They'll just plug him into the centres, a la Branko Lee, and he'll be a stud.
And go and make money somewhere else, because they just keep doing that. Like Branko Lee.
Yeah, that's right.
They're talking also, I noticed, the other sort of thing, I don't have it in front of me, but Will Chambers it's possible might have a sniff back in the Melbourne Storm side.
Yeah, I have seen those articles. I haven't read those articles, but I've seen them floating around, you know, on the interwebs. So, you know, how true they are, I'm not sure. So I guess we'll sort of have to sit back and wait and see how that pans out.
I just see that as, like, from what you said before, I see that as there's no money in union anymore, so he's trying to look to come back in, kind of thing. So,
yeah, that's right.
Again, it'll just be the Bellamy. You know, they'll turn, like you just said, like Remus Smith, who I think it was a good player at the Bulldogs, will turn these players into just potential money winners, which sounds terrible, but that's what he does. That's literally what he does. And that's why people go there on the cheap. The only one that hasn't, I'm surprised, the only one that I'm surprised, before we move on, I guess, sorry, we're stretching it out a bit, but the only one I'm surprised that hasn't really lived up to the Bellamy expectations for me was Earl Sandor. I thought when he went there, I thought he would, I don't know, like at least get a little bit better.
Sandor Earl can't even crack first grade squad.
No, that's right. One of the best looking footy players I've ever seen, but he just can't crack that side. I don't know why.
And that's the thing, he don't want to leave either, because they're the one that gave him the chance after he had his whatever it was, his drugs banned.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And he seems pretty content there. So, the last side.
Would have sucked for him this year with no reserve grade. You know, not playing football at all. Like, he played, what, 2-3 games this year?
Yeah, that's it. The last side were the minor premiers, the Penrith Panthers, and grand finalists. I mean, they finished with a bang. They finished 17 wins in a row. That's why they lift the JJ Giltner shield. Unfortunately, when they got to the big dance, but they were just simply outclassed by Melbourne.
No, and I, not so much to say the writing was on the wall, but I think sort of both of us, as the finals came around, especially the grand final, I hoped that it was going to live up to the hype, and for 60 minutes of that grand final, it just didn't happen. Like the Penrith were just nowhere near the class of what Melbourne were.
No, they weren't. They just
they had the referees to get them back in the game.
They had the team. I mean, they really had the team. They're 1-17 all year. You know that, and it's evident who was picked in the State of Origin side. But their 1-17 was brilliant. I don't know. They just, like, Melbourne just sort of kept, you know, I don't know what the word is, but they kept them wanting, so to speak.
Yeah, that's what you do. That's exactly what you do. You put this sort of side that doesn't have a whole lot of big game experience, and you put them under pressure, and that's what Melbourne does. And then when you've got them under pressure, you apply the blowtorch, and they didn't. They just didn't react. To help them. So me, Melbourne just started that game and just slapped them in the face, what, 3 times in the first 20 minutes, 15 mm-hmm. minutes? Mm-hmm. And that's especially in a group, that's just too hard to come back from.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, reviewing the whole season, they were phenomenal. You could see why they made the grand final. They, Cleary is brilliant. I thought their 5'8", I think he's still young, but their 5'8", I've lost his name now.
Jerome Luai.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. I thought he had a pretty consistent season. I mean, all of them. Stephen Crichton had a breakout season. Isaiah Yao had a really, really good season.
Right.
So, I mean, looking at their contracts for next year, they're still unsigned as Kirk Capewell, Steve Crichton. They're sort of the main, Josh Mansour, but it looks like they've sort of basically said to him, and Isaiah Yale's another one, basically said to Josh Mansour that, you know, you can start looking for another team.
Yeah, didn't see that one coming. I think, the Penrith brass have got extremely high hopes for the young kid, Charlie Staines. Why wouldn't you? He scored, 16 tries in his first 2 games. I'm pretty sure it was 6, but anyway. But yeah, that's where all their eggs are going into that basket. So they're pretty much telling Josh Mansour, thanks for your service, and you can now look elsewhere, which is a bit rough.
Well, they've gone their eggs in the basket, and even Robert Jennings, but they still got, off contract for next year is Matt Burton, Kurt Catewell, Steve Crichton, and Isaiah Yeo. So they're going to find it very hard. They have lost Josh Tarmia, who's probably on some decent money, to the Tigers, but they're going to find it very hard to keep those ones under the cap, especially Kurt Catewell and Steve Crichton. They're going to command decent money.
Oh, I think so. Teams would be chasing after them. Yeah, Jimmy Tarmel going to the Tigers is, I think, a big loss. I think the last couple of years his form has been as good as ever, that he played for with the Cowboys when he was up here. Players that teams will be sniffing around too is Matt Burton as well. Like, I think there's going to be a few teams that are lacking, a spark at 5'8". And there'll be a few teams that'll definitely have the nose out trying to get Matt Burton and trying to pry him away from the Panthers.
Well, there's already one team, and it's their one of their ex coaches in the Bulldogs. They're really, really trying to go after Matt Burton pretty hard. So
they're trying to go after any half that they can get their hands on now that I guess. Blake Green has sort of done a little bit of a backflip and said that he's not going to Canterbury now. So they've got to look elsewhere now.
Which is good because he was injured anyway. So it's kind of good that for them at the very least. You're right.
No, that's Canterbury, sort of off team a little bit. They've shipped Kieran Foran out the door. They're going in a different direction. They're looking at guys like Matt Burton. Blake Green, who's been super solid and really consistent for most of the teams he's played for. So, they're going in a totally different direction. And I think that Matt Burton, he's only young too, and he's sitting behind, Jerome Luai and Nathan Cleary. So the only way he's going to get game time is if they maybe bring him off the interchange bench, or if somebody gets hurt.
I think they'll be fine next year. They're pretty much going to keep their 1-17 for next year. It'll be for me, and they should again push for grand finalists as well. But for me, for them, it's going to be trying to retain all these new stars that they've developed, basically.
Don't underestimate the loss of James Tarmo either. I think that's a big hole to fill up front.
I mean, James Fisher-Harris was awesome this year, but he was unbelievable this
year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're right. I agree. But all I'm saying is consistently they're 1-17. What was, they should have, going into the grand final was the best side in the NRL. So. And I still will be,
They should be there or thereabouts. I don't think they're going to have the unbelievable run like they had this year, 13 straight, basically one loss and one draw throughout the year. That's not going to happen again. But I think they should be fairly consistent in who they've got there. If they continue on the form that they're in, then they'll 100% be a force to be reckoned with next year.
Well, that'll do it for our NRL podcast. Don't forget to follow us on all our socials, which is, there's only two socials. I'm going to say all our socials, but the two are Twitter at Final Play Pod and Facebook. You can give us a like, give us a share, give us everything on that as well as Spotify. Just look up Final Play Podcast on both of them. We're also, if you're into trading cards, we're on gimko.com.au. That's G-I-M-K-O, not C-K-O, just to throw that out there. Because I'm getting it perfect. I'm on fire.
They're super supportive for us. So, get on there. Help. They support us, so we want to get out there and help support them. So buy into as many breaks as humanly possible.
Oh well, if you're a betting man, it's the same thing. It's just there's just value there if you can pull it off.
Well, especially with this year, especially with this year's products, you know, if he can, talking about the NBA, if he can score the Pelicans, then you know the chances of getting a nice big fat juicy Zion, you know, his prices of cards are they're outrageous. Like honestly, like the prices that people are asking for and the prices that people are getting. They're ridiculous. They're absolutely ridiculous of a guy who's hasn't even played 25 games in the NBA.
Wouldn't it be funny? But like, you don't want to hear this. But
don't say it. Yeah, okay.
I won't say it then. But you know, that's fine. That's good. Obviously, they see the hype there. That's good. That's all I'll say.
I'll say something extremely derogatory and nasty about Anthony Davis. Don't say it.
Okay, all right, I won't say it. Oh, well, I'll finish on, my name's Jason, keep the hype on Zype, oh my God, keep the hype on Zion, Schmidt.
The media keep away from Zion Williamson Plum, just keep away, keep away.
That's the problem. Yeah, well, we'll finish on this.
It's me.
The media is going to screw
their dirty hands on
it. If he can keep all that in check, that's fine, because the media is not going to go away. We both know that.
And the other thing too, look, if New Orleans could just pick up and move into the Eastern Conference, man, it would be so much easier. The West next year, off topic because we're talking about the NFL here, but the West next year is going to be stacked.
Yeah, it will be. It could even get worse.
There could be 10, 11, 12 teams trying to fit into eight spots in the playoffs.
We'll talk about it another time, but the rumors out there, it could be absolutely worse. The West is going to be unbelievably stacked.
It's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah, it will. It'll be absolutely insane if you're in the West. Just good luck. I mean, even Phoenix have a chance. I'll throw that out there. That's what's going on at the moment. It's yeah.
Whoa. Pump the brakes on Phoenix. Give me a break.
I don't know what I'm hearing. I don't know.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm going to change my name now to Miles. Let's pump the brakes on the Phoenix Suns Plum.
Okay, then. No, you can keep with that one. But I'll tell you why in a second once we get off air, then. there's stuff going around.
Yeah, just yet. Sorry.
All right, have a good week, everyone.
Not going to happen. We'll do it. We'll do a little bit of an NBA season preview. You know, once it gets a little bit closer, you know, the draft is coming up. Next week, and free agency starts a couple of days after that. And then I guess once teams get their rosters sorted, they're still shooting for a 22nd of December start to the season. So I guess we'll sort of have to get our ass into gear a little bit and sort of have a look through some teams, and we'll do a bit of an NBA season preview in probably 5 or 6 weeks or so.
Once that free agency goes crazy. Yep, definitely.
Well, that's the thing. I think free agency.
Not as crazy as last year, but it'll go crazy at least.
This free agent class is a little ordinary.
Yeah, it is. All right. See you, everyone.
See you.